Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Backpacking Podcast. As always, John Kelly here with Jeremiah Stringer, the king of Kentucky backpacking and my personal hero in life. So how's it going, man?
Going great, man. Great to have you here in person.
Yeah, dude, we're in the Casa de Stringer. This is a great place to go record.
Yes, got our little recording studio here, and we're here to have a great time today.
I'm excited because for the first time in a long time, I will be on a campsite that you are on at the exact same time.
Yeah, man. We should, if we got time, we should record a little episode out there, a little campfire talk.
You know, that wouldn't be a bad idea. There's going to be a lot of YouTubers there from what I hear.
Yeah, we'll see if sometimes you have plans going into those trips. Let's talk about it for a few.
Yeah, let's talk about it because you got a good point there. You think you know what you're going to do, and then you get there and everything changes.
Yeah, and sometimes, like I even, sadly, it made Bridget sad, I even went on a trip real recently with her, and she wanted me to make a video, and then we were out there, and then, like, I filmed, I don't know, maybe, like, half of the first day, and then you just get in the zone of being out there, and you're, you know, all your problems are just poof gone, and you're just in this little cocoon of nature.
It's just the moment.
Uh-huh, and then you just want to enjoy it, and then you get back, and you're like, shoot, I was going to film that. So I don't know what will actually happen while we're out there, but you go in with the plan, and then plans change.
Well, as I say, I look at Dan Becker, and I look at Stephen Smith from My Life Outdoors, and those guys' videos are so good.
Yeah.
And they plan them out meticulously.
Yeah, highly dedicated to the craft.
Very good at what they do. It's the reason why they have a lot more subscribers than both of us combined.
Yeah, true that.
But they do such a good job of that. And there's times when I'm thinking, man, I'd love to do that. But then there's times I'm going, I don't really want to do that on my trip. I'm so selfish.
Yeah. So my last video that I did, it was a sponsor video by Backcountry. And I was like, I'm going to try super, super hard editing this video. I'm going to try to put in as much B-roll as I possibly can. And I spent probably double the amount of time editing, double the amount of time on the thumbnail, and double the amount of time of just while I was out there actually filming. Bridget's been doing a lot of filming for me. And I got a gimbal, and she is becoming my expert executive video producer.
That's nice. That's nice.
Yes. It's really helping and getting moving shots, like planning out shots. I done one shot where I was talking about the hammock, and I was like, Bridget, I want you to get some footage of me. You get some moving footage, add a little bit more character to the shot of me strapping up the hammock. And then when I'm walking back, I'm going to sit in the hammock. So we're planning out this shot, which a lot of times people just set up a tripod and then you basically just talk to it.
Right.
So she's walking beside me. You got the gimbal, everything's smooth. And, you know, you might have to take a few takes, but then I went to editing it and spent all that extra time doing all that. And wouldn't you know it, the video performed twice.
Masterfully.
Yeah. It performed way better. So it's all, a lot of times it's about what you put in, but there's a high unpredictability when it comes to social media.
There really is. Yeah.
Yeah, you never know. But those guys putting in the work and continually improving
all the time.
Yeah. It's gonna pay off.
Well, and here's the thing too. Like the video I'm gonna do this weekend is just a little preview for those of you who are listening and or watching. I got the big Agnes chair, the Skyline UL chair. It sits 15 inches off the ground.
Oh, I can't wait to sit in.
See, you're 6'3".
Yeah.
So that means a lot.
Yeah. 15 inches versus
10
with the chair zero.
That's the chair one. The chair zero is like 8 inches.
Yeah. I always feel like my knees are 7 inches. Chest.
Yeah. Well, you won't on this chair. It shocked me. Like I sit on it and I'm not quite like this, but take this down just a couple inches. That's where you're sitting.
Yeah. I definitely want to try that.
And it sits weight wise right between the chair zero and the chair one. So it's like right in between the two. So it's about a pound and a half. It's a little bit more than that with the stuff sack they give you, because it's just like an overkill stuff sack. All these companies, I don't know what they're thinking on these chairs. Like, hey, here's an ultralight chair and a really heavy bag to put it in. You know, they'll put two straps on the end, heavy duty zippers, and like, it's like, dude, just give me a stuff sack or something. You know, like,
I would pay more. You know, like Ben Hilltop Packs.
Yeah.
He makes those Dyneema stuff sacks. He actually just sent me one. And I would pay more for the chair if they would give me a waterproof stuff sack. Because I'll tell you this, a chair. So Bridget and I went out to Cave Run Lake.
Yeah.
And the first 45 minutes to an hour, I already told you, it was pouring, raining. And your chair's on the outside of your pack. Mine, I took the Osprey Atmos. And a lot of these backpacks have, like, at the very bottom on the front or the back, depending on the way you look at it, it's got a couple of loops that you can put whatever you want down there. And I always strap my chair down there.
Yeah, same here.
And when it's raining, then you get to camp and it's not raining, your chair's soaking wet. And you're like, well, I just carried this. I took the big boy, you know. I took the
high back.
Yeah. And I got there and it was soaking wet. And I was like, well, what use is this chair if I have these camp clothes I'm going to put on? And then I sit down in the chair.
That's soaking wet.
Soaking wet. Gets my butt wet. Gets my back wet. Get my clothes wet. So I would pay more if they would think out the stuff sack for the chair.
Yeah. Now, I will say one thing I do like about the stuff sack for the Big Agnes one. I'm not going to tell too much because then why would you watch my video? Mm-hmm. It has a zipper on it. So it's this wide opening.
Yeah.
Makes it a whole lot easier to put it in the stuff sack.
Yeah. The sunset chair is the name of the big chair that I take by Helinox. And it has a zipper as well. It's like, I don't know, just one of the seams is a zipper.
Yeah.
So whenever you're putting it in there, you don't, my problem with stuff sacks. So if you're watching the video, you look behind me and I fancied this up for us because this was a hot mess behind us.
There's a lot of good stuff here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good stuff here.
I spent like an hour straightening up this room because it seems like I do these videos and then I just come in and you know how it is. You're like, well, I'm going to start editing the video. So you just like throw all the stuff down and then you're like, wow, I'll get to cleaning all that up later. So I straighten all this up. And the problem with all these stuff sacks is you have all this down, or in our case, we're talking about a chair.
Right.
You're trying to fit it in this tiny little opening. And you're just stuffing and stuffing and stuffing. I don't know. I don't know the best way to do it, but I know that zipper makes everything a lot easier.
Yeah, that I kind of want to share it with Ben and be like, hey, that new material you're making bear bags out of.
Yeah.
Could you make a chair sack out of that
but
with a zipper on it?
Wouldn't you, if you wanted it kind of waterproofed or like at least with the, so the Dyneema is waterproof, but it has an opening too. You know,
well,
so it's not fully waterproof.
Well, my thing with it would be, I could just put it on my pack upside down so the zipper's on the bottom.
It against your pack?
Yeah, because I always strap it to the bottom of my pack on the straps down at the bottom, right?
I don't think that would work.
And you've got if the zipper was on the underside and it's raining.
I think that it'd make it a lot less likely to get wet through the zipper, but that torrential downpour that I was in for 45 minutes, it wouldn't have mattered the position because, like, even the water made the inside of my pack wet. I didn't bring a pack cover, and that would have been the key. I think if what you're saying, if you paired that with a pack cover,
yeah,
I think you'd almost be home free.
Well, and even if you did the YKK zippers that have the waterproof kind of thing on them, I mean, it would add a touch of weight, but it would still make it easier to use, and it wouldn't tear up. Like my stuff sack is torn to pieces.
Which one?
My Dyneema one I got from Hilltop Packs. I've used it so much, it's got holes everywhere in it now.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. Like Dyneema is not real thick. So if you're keeping that on the outside of your pack,
you're shoving your seat, your chair down into it all the time. Yeah, it can get a little tore up. So
I wonder how much those little stuff sacks weigh. Can't be much if it's Dyneema.
Ounce or two.
Yeah. It doesn't have a zipper or anything. It's just got like a drawstring and a little dongle or whatever those things are.
But even with the zipper, using a fabric like that would still take ounces off of the weight of it because the sack that they send you has like canvas straps to on either side that you could hold and like it's lined with that stuff. It's just like it's just an overkill, and like I said, I'll talk more about it in the video about my opinions on it, but yeah, I don't understand why they give you an ultralight item and then give you a heavy sack to put it in.
The only thing I could think of is like I feel like companies have to have a happy medium, right? They have to, at X number of cost, they have to provide Y quality product. And so those have to meet somewhere. And that's kind of what we get. But I wish that they would be in the mindset of, even though this is a luxury item and you're carrying some extra weight, let's make it as light as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's ways to do that and still keep that quality up.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's an expensive chair.
Yeah.
I think it's like $140, $150 or something like that.
Yeah.
This is not a cheap chair.
I think my big one is like $150.
Yeah.
So that's right up there with it.
Yeah. But this one weighs less than 2 pounds.
Yeah. Mine's like 3 pounds,
yeah,
6 ounces or something.
So it's incredibly well made. I love the way the legs are. There's a lot of good things about it, but the thing is, it's like, it could be lighter. Like,
yeah.
and it's just like little modifications, and they could take 5 or 6 ounces off the thing without breathing. Like, it just like that.
I don't know. I feel like you could be a consultant for these companies.
I should be a consultant for these companies.
I feel like people.
So, hey, if anybody's looking,
this man right here,
I'm ready. Just call me.
I don't know. This kind of sounds bad to say. It feels like we're tooting our own horns here, but I'm going to say it anyway because I don't care.
Toot your horn, man.
Well, I'm not going to toot my horn. I'm just going to say, in the YouTube backpacking game, the people that produce enough content that are like spending money on trying out all these pieces, like, it's a double-edged sword, because if you're through hiking with gear, then that means you've used that gear a ton.
A lot.
And
a whole lot.
If you're doing YouTube, well, a lot of us have day jobs, right? So like Dan and Steven that you mentioned earlier, their day job is YouTube.
Yeah, they're full-time.
So they're in a kind of a different category, but the average person that is making YouTube videos about whatever, and then they have another job.
And families and all the other things that go along with that.
You don't have as much time to test all that stuff as somebody that is dedicating multiple months to basically just using the gear most of the time until it fails.
Or someone like Devin Ashby, who works at a backpacking gear company and teaches a backpacking class at a college.
They got a lot of opportunities to test
it.
People like us, you know, if you're doing, let's say, a trip a month is usually my goal. And a lot of times, like during the summer, I will go 6 weeks without a multi-day backpacking trip just because I don't want to be out there and sweat to death.
Right.
But then in the fall or in the spring, the shoulder seasons, or winter too, like I'm out on Christmas break where I'm a teacher.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes I will take like 3 trips in a week. So it kind of levels out like a trip.
Which we have to do our annual December trip.
Oh, yeah.
We got to make sure we get our annual December trip in with Jason.
Oh, that'll be good.
That's got to happen.
So we have the opportunity to test this gear, but not as much as somebody that is either doing YouTube full time and are taking like a trip every week or every 2 weeks. Hard to do.
Right.
Especially financially. I don't know about you, but paying to take all these flights and driving and all this gets very expensive. So they can test the gear more. But I feel like we use the gear at least enough to where we pick up certain, I don't know, like you're saying, like those tiny little things that you could do to shed the weight that sometimes maybe as a producer of a product, even though it's your product, like Big Agnes or Helinox or whatever, that is, those companies are a lot of times very big, and it's a whole team of people. And there's a lot of opinions.
And there may be a really good reason why they didn't go the lighter route.
Yeah.
It could be a durability thing. It could be any number of reasons.
But I feel like the amount of testing that you at least get to do, you could be a consultant.
I would love to.
Sort.
That'd be so much fun.
I think so, too.
That'd be so much fun.
You know, I had a lot of people. There's so many. We live in such a great time. There's so many jobs that you would never even think of that you could do. For example, like I was talking about consultant, imagine traveling to the different companies that are producing these products and being like, all right, outfit me on all this gear and I'm going to do this 4-day trip and I'm going to come back with all these notes and, let's improve some of your products. And give them all these points. Like I had this professor in college, awesome professor, loved him to death. And he used to be a middle school teacher, and then to be the college professor that kind of teaches people how to teach, the pedagogical avenue of it, you have to have 8 years of experience in the classroom. And then you can start teaching college classes, teaching people how to teach. And he did that. He went, and then he was in the college realm, multiple universities. And then he left from being a professor to being a consultant at different universities. And his job was to go in, and let's say you're teaching, I don't know, discrete mathematics. His job is to...
Wait, hold up. What, teaching what?
Discrete mathematics.
Discrete mathematics? Like stuff you'd only do with your wife, like mathematics?
No.
Like, what does that mean? I don't even know what that means, discrete.
Discrete mathematics.
Stuff we don't talk about in public. This is, this is secret math.
It is a... It's basically like proving things true in math.
Okay.
It's all about proofs.
Okay. So it just sounds really weird calling it discrete.
Yeah. Well, for example,
we don't want to talk about this right now.
Maybe not to bore people, but basically something like maybe you wanted to prove that you wanted to write a proof that if you were to square an odd integer, so like a whole number, positive or negative.
Okay.
If you were going to square that, so multiply it by itself,
mm-hmm.
every time you square that odd integer, the answer is going to come out to be an odd number. So, for example, 3 times 3 is 9, or 9 times 9 is 81.
And 4 times 4 is 16.
Yeah, but that's an even number.
So, I know.
But so that's not applicable in this proof.
Okay, good deal.
So let's say that you, so let's say you're trying to prove that. That would be an example of something you would do in that class.
Okay.
So that, so
that is discrete mathematics, and I'm going to be teaching that.
Let's imagine that you're teaching it. And my job as a consultant.
The worst class in any college ever, because I would be horrible at it.
Well, that may be the case.
So, I just think it's funny you put me in a mathematics class. That's awesome.
Well, you're the professor. I'm the consultant.
Okay, consult me.
Okay. So a lot of times the problem with college professors is, one, they are passionate about their subject matter, but they really are in the position they're in because they want to further that field.
Right.
AKA research, work on design, whatever. And it's not so much like teaching is something that they have to do. It's not something, it's not their primary goal at the university. They really want to further the research and development of said field. And so whenever you're not super passionate about one thing, but you have to do it, not so great at it.
A lot of times. And I would definitely not be great at doing anything having to do with math.
But you've had college professors that... They may be great people, but not the best teacher. Some of the smartest people that you'll ever meet in your entire life and know more about that thing that they're teaching than anybody else, but can't articulate it in a way that is going to be good for learning.
So you come in.
I come in my job.
And you go, you look at me and you go, John, you're an idiot when it comes to math. Let me show you how to do this right.
No, I come in and this is what this professor I'm talking about, that transition from the school, public schools, to university to now as a consultant.
Right.
His job is to now to come in and say, look, you know how to do all this stuff. Let me give you some pointers and work with you over the semester on how to become a better communicator and how to become better at articulating these ideas so people can understand them.
And if you don't get it right, we're going to fire you.
Well, they probably have tenure.
Yeah, probably.
So that'd be tough. So, yeah. There's so many jobs that you never even dream of doing. Like, who would have thought of, like, I could be a high school teacher and I become really, really good at it. And then I don't want to teach anymore, even though I'm good at it. I want to go somewhere and be an entrepreneur where I run my own business, where I go to the university and I go into the dean's office or whoever the president of that school. And I say, look, my job is to make you all better. Let me do my job. And here's how much I charge. And then I can charge whatever I want because there's no ceiling on my business. And you're no longer working a 9-to-5 where you're teaching and you're working in the public sector with these students.
Right.
Now you're an entrepreneur running your own business and deciding, depending on the market, how much money you're making.
It's not a bad situation.
No. And the key is if you want to pursue an avenue of business like that, you think outside the box. So what I'm thinking is for you, you could go to the companies and you could be their consultant.
I should be.
Wouldn't that be great?
I would love that.
But there's got to be a million other jobs that we could think of, or maybe not think of because we're not doing them right now.
Yeah.
That are in this realm of something that we're passionate about. unless you love your day job. I mean, some people absolutely, like those college professors, some of them absolutely love what they're doing.
Yeah, and they're really good at it.
Yeah, and they don't want to leave that.
Not at all.
But to each their own.
Well, you know, we had a topic we were going to talk about during this episode. I think we're going to save that for another episode because this is too much fun to talk about.
Yeah.
So let me ask you something. When you're looking at your gear, and we have a lot of gear, admittedly, probably more than we'll ever need.
Dude, we're surrounded by it in
this
room.
Yes. So you got all this gear.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever picked up a brand new piece of gear and just looked at it and immediately went, oh, no.
Oh, that's a good question.
Have you ever picked up a piece of gear and done that? Because I can tell you one for me.
Are you talking about gear that you specifically were like, excited about, you researched, you ordered? Are you talking about gear that somebody
actually spent? It wasn't something some company sent you, because if somebody sends it to you, it's no good. Who cares?
Yeah,
because you didn't pay for it. But something you actually paid for, and then you got it, and you're like, oh.
Well, shoes is a big one for me.
Yeah.
A lot of times I'll order shoes, and then you read the reviews and stuff, and they'd be like, yep, these are perfect. And then you try them on, and you're like, these are a half inch too narrow. Like, I don't know who said that these were a wide shoe and a wide toe box.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had to send them back. You wait another 2 weeks, and you get your money back. You order new ones, and then you got to get the wide version. So that's one that I would go with.
Well, we just had him on a few weeks ago. Rob Pelton went through that. He documented an entire thing about all the different shoes he tried out that he did not like.
Uh-huh.
And then he finally got to the ones I'm using right now, the Topo what are they called? Trail Venture Pros or Ultra Venture Pros. And I haven't heard what he thinks about them because he took them with him to Peru, which his pictures from Peru, pretty sweet.
Oh, bro. We were going to post them whenever we had Jeff Garmire.
Yeah, we didn't get
them. We had so much fun.
Oh, it was too much fun. Yeah. Jeff. But yeah, he had a whole like thing with shoes where he just kept sending them back. Mm-hmm. He's like, these aren't comfortable. I walked around in these. They're not right. You know, the nice thing about REI is you've got a year.
Yeah. And even if you use them,
yeah,
you know, you can still send them back.
Yeah,
after trying them out.
They just have a really great return policy.
Yeah,
but I will say for me, it was the Mountain Hardwear tent that I bought. I think it's called the Stratos.
Uh-huh.
I think that was the name of it. I got it. The tent's awesome.
Uh-huh.
It's really lightweight. Like, it's an ultralight, semi-freestanding tent. It's huge on the inside. It's got two huge vestibules. The entries are real easy to get in and out of. The zippers are fantastic. Everything's great except for one major flaw.
It's not waterproof.
It is not sealed.
Bro.
It is 2022, man. Why would you make a tent at this point in the game and not seam seal it?
Now, did they tell you ahead of time?
It didn't say in the stuff I read. Okay. It wasn't until after I ordered it and I saw that it was coming in. I went and read a couple other reviews I hadn't read before, and they were all like, this tent would be perfect if it was seam sealed. So, I had to go seam seal this. It's like, why don't you tape these things and seal them? Like,
do you feel like they were being misleading?
A little.
Yeah.
A little. Yeah.
And you have a Mountain Hardwear hat on right now.
I like Mountain Hardwear.
I have the Ghost Whisper, which I will talk about in just a second.
But you actually, that one actually disappointed you.
I'll tell you more.
Oh, Let's Mountain Hardwear. I'm sorry, man. Like, I'm real sorry. But
we'll still take a sponsorship if you want.
Yeah. If you want to sponsor the podcast and prove us wrong.
Yeah.
Do that.
But yeah, probably won't use that tent unless it's seen.
That
field,
tent was a major disappointment. Remember, I told you about, like, I went car camping with it just to test it out.
Uh-huh.
I didn't want to take it on a backpacking trip yet because I just wanted to test it out. And I get it out there, and it starts raining that night. And I realize it's not seam sealed.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, oh. So I had to, like, pack everything up and go. And right as I got everything in the truck, the downpour hit. And if I'd have been in that tent, everything on the inside would have been soaked.
And did you look at seam sealing it yourself?
Dude, I seam sealed my Big Agnes.
It's a mess.
Fly
dude.
Creek. I hated it.
Yeah, I would pay. I definitely pay extra.
I will always pay extra. I need to find some place to take the tent because the tent's so nice to use.
Uh huh.
I would love to be able to use it, but I can't unless I know the weather's going to be zero chance of rain.
You should seam seal it.
Yeah, I want to take it somewhere and have somebody else do it.
Yeah, you know who can probably do it. Because I have found that it's very hard to find like people that specialize in tents and tent poles and all that around. Like, there's some out west. Like, you can order tent poles and stuff from these companies.
Right.
But around here, the only place that I could find, like, I had a zipper that was messed up on my North Face tent. This tent right here, the Tri-Arch 3. And I was taking it to different places around here.
Which is really heavy. when you take that and another tent and you go hiking with both of them in your backpack.
You're not wrong.
I'm never letting that sit, man. That was 2 years ago and I'm still not over it.
That's okay. So I wanted to get that zipper fixed.
Yeah.
And so I imagined to fix the zipper, you needed a new like zipper. You could probably reuse the little clasp thing. I don't know what they're called that actually closes the teeth on the zipper. But I took it to different places, and the only place that I could find that he could even do something remotely close was an upholstery place. They replace fabric and stuff on boats, on chairs, etc. So some place like that might be able to seam seal that for you for cheap.
Yeah, I didn't know if J&H did that. J&H is an outfitter in Lexington, not far from here. But yeah, I don't know if they'd be able to do it. The thing is, I can do it. I'm just going to be honest with you.
It's a pain, man.
I don't want to do it.
So to do it, you have to buy the kit, or you can make your own seal. And you basically paint it on just like you're painting a wall or something. And you're painting that seal with the seam seal. And then you have to hang it somewhere dry. But the problem is, whenever you're hanging it to dry, if part of the tent that you seam sealed touches
another part of the tent, it sticks to it.
Sticks to it. And then when you pull it, it's okay. But then whenever you pull it back apart, it can pull
that out.
And cosmetically, I don't know if you care what it looks like, but if you get that around the outside of your tent, it just doesn't look good, which some people care, some people don't.
Well, the big thing for me, and this is the big thing for me, I don't really have a lot of space in my house. You see my house.
Uh-huh.
I don't have a huge house. And so I don't really have a place where I can splay out a tent fly.
Yeah, or
the kids get into it. It's just, I just don't have a place where I can put that, where I can actually do it and let it rest and let it dry, and I just don't have a place to do it.
Yeah.
And when I did my Fly Creek a few years ago, because the Fly Creek that I have,
yeah, the dog door tent,
yeah, the one you love so much, the fly on it wasn't water sealed. I had to do it, and I remember it was a nightmare, dude. And I was just like, no, that was in 2018. That was also 2018. Okay. So that's 4 years ago.
Yeah,
you know. I would like to think there's enough people complaining about non-seam sealed tents by this point.
Yeah.
These companies would just automatically do it or offer to do it for like a $20 upcharge, which I will pay the $20 upcharge to get my tent seam sealed.
Yeah. So Six Moons Designs, it was a $30 upcharge.
Yeah. Well,
and they did it.
I got the 40th one person tent from Outdoor Vitals, and it was completely sealed. No extra charge, just part of the tent. Like they sealed it.
They make quality products.
Love me some Outdoor Vitals.
I think that I'm going to take my Outdoor Vital Zero degree on this upcoming trip that we're going to take.
Mm-hmm.
I was putting everything away today, I'll tell you why it was out. So you helped me with a thumbnail last week.
Yeah.
Thank you, by the way.
Yeah.
And
which you didn't use my help, which is probably good because it got really good. It did really well.
I did use your help. So for one thing, you said, well, maybe take out the arrow and change it to,
oh yeah, the greater like, than symbol. Yeah.
So I ended up using a less than symbol because I'd already staged the backpacks in the way I wanted them for the thumbnail. But what I was doing was I needed the backpacks to look full for the thumbnail. So I stuffed a bunch of my different down, like sleeping bags and all that to make the backpacks really poofy so I could just sit them on the ground, and make the thumbnail. So, but like I said earlier, I just threw it on the ground whenever I came back in. So as I was packing my sleeping bags and all that up today and like storing them, I was looking and I was thinking, you know, the weather that we're going to get, I don't know if you've looked at it, but
it's going to be in the 30s.
So 35 low on most nights and like a high,
upper 60s.
Well, one day is like 58 is a high.
Oh, it's Saturday. 60, yeah.
62. So, I was thinking, man, it's going to be cold. So I was like,
that's great hiking weather though, man.
Perfect.
And that's camping. That's great hiking weather.
Yeah. We'll be sitting around making a big old fire.
Oh yeah.
I'm going to bring a big saw.
Oh yeah. Good. So, I won't bring one then.
No, bring one too. We'll have,
I don't have a big saw. I've got a little saw.
Okay.
So,
I was thinking, man, which sleeping bag or quilt do I want to take? I was thinking I'm already going to have to take my winter esque gear. I'm going to need a good jacket, good rain jacket, like extra layers, leggings, all that stuff. I was like, my backpack's already going to be pretty heavy. So do I want to take my Nemo 15 degree, the Disco, or do I want to take my 0 degree Outdoor Vitals quilt? And the one thing scary about the quilt is if you don't have it strapped on right, then you get some draft. So even though it's 0 degree.
So I'm taking a hammock.
Well, I'm taking my wife. And I don't have the equipment to hammock her out too.
That's true. That's true.
So I'll be sleeping in the palace, the North Face Palace there.
That guy right there.
Yeah. And I was like, well, you know, we're only going to be hiking in a few miles, so it doesn't really matter if I carry 30 pounds or 40 pounds.
Right.
You know, and maybe set up and do some day hiking and stuff. I don't really know what the plans are going to be, and I don't want to share it with everybody right now because we haven't went yet.
Yeah.
I'm sure that we will talk a lot about it.
Oh, we'll talk about it Monday night. Next Monday.
So, anyway, I was stuck between the two. The good thing about the 15 degree Nemo is it's a full sleeping bag and it has a hood, and a hood is keeps you a lot warmer.
Right, right.
But it's a 15 degree where the Outdoor Vitals, I don't remember the fill power I got. I think I got a pretty high fill power on it, and it is a lot fluffier than my Nemo, but no hood. And it's a quilt. It's not a sleeping bag, so you don't zip it around you. So I still haven't decided. That may be a game time decision. I might just bring both and then decide in the car on the way or when I pull up. Or I could bring one night and, you know, if we walk back by the car or something, get the other one if I want.
I'm trying to figure out, I've got a 40 degree underquilt from, what's her face? It's a UGQ.
UGQ.
And I've had that down to 25 degrees and stayed plenty warm in it. And it's because it's UGQ. They overstuff everything.
Right.
And so the overstuff keeps it, you know, they're the best about if you get a 30 degree quilt from them, you're going to be fine at 30 degrees.
Yeah.
You don't have to even sweat it. Like you're going to be fine and well below that typically. And so I remember Chad, who used to work there. I had taken that quilt down to Grayson Highlands. With Miyagi and Trips and Hunter's Trip and my buddy Josh. We all went down there and we camped out for a few days. And I remember it got down to 34 degrees and I had that 45 degree quilt or 40 degree, whatever it was, 40 or 45, something like that.
I'd say 40. I don't think they do.
But I never got cold. Didn't get the slightest bit cold the whole time.
But you're a pretty warm sleeper.
But still, dude, I sent a message to Chad and I said, "You're not gonna believe this." And I told him, he goes, "Nope, that's exactly what it was made for." I'm like, "Then why do you call it a 40 if it's good for 30? You know, like, but he said it. He said we designed the quilt so that 40 is ultimate comfort, but 30 is still comfortable too.
What do you think about the rigging on that for how you set it up?
At first it was a little awkward.
Yeah.
But then once I got used to it, I don't even think about it now. Cause now I've got a 0 degree under quilt and a 40 degree under quilt. So it doesn't matter how cold it's getting, I'll be fine one way or the other. And it does a great job.
Well, what did you have above you on that Grayson Highlands trip?
A 20 degree, Enlightened equipment.
And was it Revelation. A quilt or a sleeping bag?
It's a Revelation quilt.
Okay.
It's got the foot box.
Sewn in?
No, it's a zipped up one. I use it in the summer too.
Okay. Yeah. You can unzip it.
It's just like a blanket. Yeah.
20 degrees in the summer.
You'd be surprised how good it works.
All right.
But I say that, but then this past year I got a Loco Libre Gear 50 degree quilt that I used I was going to use all summer until every injury known to man happened to me and I never got to go out.
This man's wearing an ankle brace. I'm wearing an
ankle brace as we speak. And I have backpacked and gone two hikes with this jacked up ankle because dang it, I'm going out. I don't care at this point.
What's your doctor say about that?
I don't ask. Don't ask. You don't have to answer. You don't have to get the answer you don't want. So,
well, I want to talk for just a second about the rigging on this underquilt.
Yeah.
So it's got three different, maybe four. We'll count them here in a second, of like adjustability. So first of all, you hook it on each side of the hammock.
Yep.
And I have a...
And you can adjust it laterally, so you can move it towards one side or towards the other. So that's one adjustment that you have. Uh-huh.
You can also raise it closer to your butt or lower it away, like give it more droop, for lack of a better term.
Right.
And then you can seal up the end
draft collars. Draft collars.
Tuck the draft collars in and then seal up around those draft collars.
Yeah.
That might be all of the adjustments.
I think it is.
But, you know, when you have that many adjustments, makes a little bit more complicated. So, like, I forget who who was I with? Man, I can't remember. But they were like, you know, I don't like, everybody sings the praises of UGQ, and I don't know if I like this underquilt or not. He was like, this is my second or third time using it. And he's just like, it's a little too complicated. I can't figure it out. And then I showed him like the different adjustments, if I remember correctly. And he's like, oh, okay. Well, I still don't know if I like it. So I would say UGQ on comfort level, I haven't found anything that's beat it.
No.
On complexity, there are more simple things out there when it comes to the underquilts. But if you like the customizability,
if you want to dial it in, if you want to really dial it in, they're fantastic.
Yeah, you want those.
Yeah, I think the first couple times I used it, and I used it in like the spring and summer when I first used it. So, I mean, if it was open a little bit, it wasn't a big deal. But it was when I took that September trip down to Grayson Highlands and it dropped down into the 30s overnight. That was where I got it dialed in really good, got everything sealed up real nice. Man, I did not get the slightest bit cold the whole time.
I'll tell you what you could do. If you're going to bring that on this trip and it's going to be, I don't know, it could be freezing. Like I'm going to sleep with my filter.
Yeah, yeah, I am too.
Because depending on where you're at, like I don't know if the listeners have heard this, so we'll share it again if you haven't. But, you know, if the weatherman says it's going to be 35, prepare for 25.
Yeah.
Just in case, because if you're next to water, you know, it could be more moisture, it could be colder air, could get a frost on everything. Or if you're up high and there's not a whole lot of wind break, that wind can really cut you.
Oh, big time.
So what you could do is take your underquilt protector, because they're not giving a single speck of rain, not none. So you don't really need the underquilt protector for that. I always take it if it's going to be rainy because I don't want my underquilt being wet. But that right now, there could add a little extra.
Now, I am going to bring my tarp and set it up because of condensation.
Yeah.
I'd rather have the condensation on the tarp than on the inside of my hammock. So by setting up the tarp, the condensation doesn't build up on top of my hammock.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I went out 2 or 3 weeks ago, and by the morning, I woke up and I could – when I pushed the top of my hammock, the bug netting, it just dripped water in.
Did you go tarpless?
Yeah, I went tarpless because it was a perfectly clear night. I mean, it was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. I set the tarp up. I had it hanging up. It was still in the sleeve, but I didn't actually set it up.
I'm going to order me some snake skins. I don't know where you can buy any that are Dyneema now.
Dude, you got to get one of those Dyneema tarps.
Yeah, I just don't want to spend the money on it.
7 ounces, man.
Our
7 ounces.
The
my shelter setup right now is less than 2 pounds.
I know, but War Bonnet, I use their Thunderfly, and it does so good. It's just that it's not Dyneema.
Yeah. Now, if it's winter, and I know there's gonna be like nasty weather, like snow and stuff, I'm bringing my winter dream tarp from UGQ because that thing is huge.
A lot of surface area,
but it gets all the way down, man. It like, there's only like 2 or 3, maybe 3 or 4 inches from the ground. So nothing's getting wet. Nothing's getting covered up. I'm like basically in a tent.
And what's the weight on that?
A lot.
A lot? Like over 2 pounds?
No, I don't think it's over 2 pounds.
Okay.
But it's over a pound for sure.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking maybe 20 ounces, 21 ounces.
See, I think that 16 to 20 ounce range is pretty typical for a seal poly tarp.
But 7 ounces, dude.
7 ounces, yeah, but the price tag is the thing. The price tag, how much did it cost?
Dude, yeah, I think it was $350.
$350? See, man.
And I did buy it. That was not a gift from me, but I did buy that. Like, everybody hears like us talking about gear, and we really do buy gear. Like,
we do buy, yeah.
We don't get everything given to us. We do buy gear.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know, man.
See, I shot you a picture, didn't I, of my last trip? Or no, I didn't shoot you the picture of it. My base weight, with the food for the 2 days. That's not including the water, but it did have the food for the 2 days in it. It was 11 pounds.
Oh my goodness!
So I've like, if I took the food out,
My
base weight would have been under 10 pounds.
Dude, I can feel my knees for this weekend trip. I can feel them right now, and they're gonna be like, why?
I'm not bringing a lot because we're going down like on Thursday when nobody else is there, and we're gonna camp at a different place than where everybody's camping on Friday, and then we're gonna come and camp with everybody on Friday night. But But yeah, I'm going to try, what I'm trying to do is shake down a little bit for my Foothills Trail trip. So I'm going to try and pack it like I would for that trip.
Yeah,
the minus weather, some of the food.
I'd say the weather on that one will be pretty similar.
Yeah, they the
hopefully.
I looked it up, and the typical weather for the time of year when we're going is like low 60s down into the 30s overnight. It's almost the same thing as what we're dealing with.
My Foothills Trail was like literally this week, I think. I'm pretty sure it's October because it was either spring or fall because we get fall break and spring break. So I don't remember which one, but it was either October or April. I'd have to look. My point is that the low, I mean, it got down to like 28, 25, that area whenever we went. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty cold.
That was atypical, though. That wasn't normal.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's not normal. Okay. I've been looking at the – I've done so much research on this stupid trail.
Remind
not
me.
Stupid trail. It's not a stupid trail. It's a great trail. I love the trail. I haven't been on it yet, but I heard it's awesome. It's a
beautiful trail.
Yeah.
Remind me before you leave
here. I don't want to tick off anybody who has anything to do with the Foothills Trail. Like, when I say stupid, I mean stupid awesome.
Well, they do a lot of maintenance, so you'll probably run into some of the people that are on the Foothill Trail Conservancy.
Well, FTC. Everybody I've talked to, you included, it's just like there's no water crossings, but it's not a bridge.
Yeah, you'll love it.
There's the trail itself is immaculate.
Yeah.
And don't go north-south. Go south-north.
Well, it's east to west or west-east. So which one are you
on the doing? Map, it looks south to north.
I don't think
it may be east to west, but it looks south to north.
We should look at, but I'm going to send my guide with you. And I made some notes and stuff in there. Like took an ink pen. I think this was like 2 or 3 years ago. So I may be fibbing to you, but
well, I know you can't reserve campsites.
No,
it's first come first serve. So that's now that we only have there's three of us going. So it's not a big group or anything.
You'll
so
be fine camping.
Problem finding camps.
There's our first night. I think it was our first night on trail. We had to drive there. And for our friends that we were going with that live around the Cincinnati area, they had like a somewhere between 6 and 8 hour drive. It was a long drive for them. It was a little shorter for Bridget and I. But whenever you got to drive that far, you got to get up really early. So they got up 3 or 4 in the morning. We made the whole drive. And then you got to park one car at one state park, park another car at another state park. And then you have to put your food cache.
Or you get a hold of someone who's part of the area who does all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And you get a shuttle, which is what we're going to end up doing. We're going to actually park on the one end and get a shuttle to the other. And he's actually going to go stash our food for us.
Well, we did shuttle. So that's another. Yeah. The way it worked whenever we stashed our food was he drove us with our food and we took 5 gallon buckets. Did you,
I'm not sure. Crow flies high. Brad, he hooked me up with.
Well, he used the same person that I did.
Okay, cool.
I don't know if they want me to say their name though.
Yeah, we won't worry about that right now.
Yeah, because I feel like that person gets so much, so many calls and stuff that he thinks it's a little overwhelming. The trail has become a lot more popular.
Yeah,
so he stays busy. But anyway, 5 gallon bucket, put all your food in there, and we hit it at like the 3 day mark or something like that. And he took us to a gravel parking lot. And then he's like, all right, grab your buckets, follow me. And then we walk down, I don't know, 100 yards or so, and then stash them in this down tree and then covered it up with some stuff. And he's like, I've been stashing stuff here for years and nobody's ever bothered it. No animals or anything have ever gotten into it in the 5 gallon bucket. And we just basically went to Lowe's, got a 5 gallon bucket and a lid, and that was it. Well, we had 2 5 gallon buckets because it was two couples.
Yeah.
But, I don't know if he'll do the same thing with you or not. It may depend on where you're wanting to do your food grab at.
Yeah. Well, one of the guys that I'm hiking with, this is his first time ever doing anything like this.
Uh-huh.
And so we're not doing huge miles. So like the first day, I think we're doing 8 miles. The next day we're doing 9 miles. And our biggest day, we're going to do less than 12 miles.
Yeah.
So we're not doing any massive hiking days. I mean, there's some length. I mean, 11 miles is not like a short hike, but it's also not like
it's manageable.
15 to 20 miles.
Yeah, and the risk for injury is a lot lower with that lower mileage.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because
body will be fatigued as much.
Yeah, and you'll get, you all will get to pass, what's the name of that lake? I always mispronounce it. I'm not even going to try it. But you also get to pass the highest point in either North or South Carolina. I think it's South Carolina. It's
South Carolina, yeah.
Yeah, because Mount Mitchell, isn't that the highest point in North Carolina?
I think you're right.
And you won't be near there, I don't think. So it'd be the highest point in South Carolina. And dude, they have a whole structure built up there. You'll get to go on and see the overlook because it was under construction when I was doing it.
Yeah.
So you'll get to go up there, check all that out. You'll get some great pictures. And if you can, end hitting that. Because we hit it on the very last day. For you, since you're doing lower mileage, you'll probably hit it on the next to last or the last.
Yeah.
But I would try to go that way. I'll tell you whenever we get off the air.
Well, I've already talked to people who've done it, and they all said the way I'm going is the way to go because if you go the other way, you'll burn out in the first 2 days.
Okay.
From just the elevation. They're like, it's gradual elevation.
Yeah.
From the one end we're starting, and then it's a big downhill to end.
They do have one hill. It's called Heartbreak. Something. Heartbreak Hill. Heartbreak. Yeah. That one's got a lot of stairs and stuff.
Is that the one with the waterfall?
Well, there's so many waterfalls, I couldn't tell you.
I know there's one waterfall, though, that there's like stairs right by the waterfall.
Oh, no, that's upper White Waterfalls, maybe?
Okay.
Oh, I can't remember. I literally was just talking about this weekend, reliving all this, because Bridget and I went up to Cincinnati and spent the night with the couple that we did the foothills trail.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
And met their baby.
Oh, that's cool.
So, yeah, it's a great time. But we were kind of reliving all of our foothills trail adventure.
Yeah.
And it was fresh on my mind, but I still can't remember any of the stuff I'm trying to talk to you about.
Well, the big thing for me is just I want to kind of shake down my pack and everything for that trip this weekend because I'm going to take a hammock. I thought about taking the 40th tent, but as you know, I've been having shoulder issues. And
I feel like it'd be heavier.
But I'm sleeping on the ground.
Oh,
it just won't be comfortable. So I like, it doesn't matter what I do. If you're having shoulder back issues, sleeping on the ground is always gonna be more uncomfortable than sleeping in a hammock. So I'm gonna be doing the hammock for that trip. And I want to get all my stuff together and just like pretty much how I'm going to have it when I go on that trip.
Yeah.
And, hopefully fingers crossed, I can keep that base weight around 10 pounds, just because we're going to be out for a week. And my pack, the thing is, the great thing about it is the pack is so light now because I've got a 20-ounce pack. And it's amazing how many people have given me flack about that backpack.
Which one?
The Z-Pax. Z-Pax R-Call.
R-Call?
Yeah, it's a 60-liter pack, which I think it's probably more like 55. That's fine. It's still big enough. But it's so many people just been like, oh, Z-Pax. I had one lady like comment that she said something along the lines of, I've met very few people that actually like their Z-Pax packs. And I'm going, a lot of people who like their Z-Pax packs. So,
well, Z-Pax is still in business.
Yeah, obviously they're doing okay.
And that backpack is not like a $50 backpack. It's not like that's an Amazon special.
Right.
You know, so if people didn't like it, you think it'd get a reputation, then people wouldn't buy it.
And it's like, it feels bulletproof.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's that new Ultra fabric.
Yeah. So you're taking that on this trip.
Yep, that'll be there this weekend.
Okay, I'll check that out too.
And I'm gonna take that chair, the Skyline UL chair. Because I'm telling you, man, one of the things I hate about the camp chairs, the typical camp chairs, is getting out of the camp chair.
Yeah, you need somebody there in front of you to pick you up.
Yeah, it's like you just got done hiking all day. Your legs are tired, and you're sitting there, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I gotta do a squat now.
You know,
you gotta get up.
You know the weirdest feeling in the world. Well, there's two of them to do a backpack.
Yeah.
One is you backpack all day, you take your pack off, and then all of a sudden it feels like that you are not just lighter than you were with the backpack on. It feels like you're 50 pounds lighter, like you're walking on air. Your body's so confused.
Yeah.
And that feeling is great.
That's awesome.
Let me tell you the opposite end of the spectrum. You did a backpacking trip. You're exhausted. You drive home. On the way, you're 2.5 hours into your drive. You got to stop and get gas.
And your legs are so tight.
Bro, you get out of the vehicle to pump your gas. And your body, you haven't moved. You know, you've been sitting there cranking.
The hiker strut.
Oh, my gosh, dude. You waddle into that gas station. Yeah, that right there is like the opposite. The elation that you feel of taking the pack off and walking around camp versus sitting for 2 hours in the car. And then you get out and you're walking like an old lady, like a 75-year-old lady, got osteoporosis and scoliosis. And
so when I was doing the Sheltoe Trace, I had it was like a 45 or 50 mile weekend. I did, it was like 3 days. Mm-hmm. And, I remember the first day I didn't do a lot cause I didn't get there early enough to really do a lot of miles. So I only did like 5 or 6 miles. So I'm averaging 20 miles the next 2 days.
What'd you say this trail was?
Shiltoe Trace.
Okay.
And so I get to the end. My buddy gives me a ride. Like mm-hmm. I had a friend pick me up at the trailhead. I had my wife drop me off at the trailhead where I started. Mm-hmm. And then buddy picked me up at the end of that weekend. Uh-huh. And we stop at a gas station to get something to drink. And I got out of that thing. He just looked at me. And he goes, why do you keep doing this? he's like, you look miserable. I was like, dude, it was the best weekend ever. He's like, what the heck? Because I just hiked like 21 miles that day or something. I think I hiked 5 or 6 the first day. And then like 17, 18, 19 miles, whatever it was the next day. And the last day I hiked 21 miles. And so like I'm
you
in
the hiker high.
Oh, dude, I loved it. But man, my legs were shot because, you know, they don't move.
Uh-huh.
Like even when you're at camp, you move a little bit, you know, you're doing things and all that. But man, when you get in a car and you don't move for hours,
uh-huh.
that's a whole different story, man.
Bro,
hiker strut is notorious.
Yeah. I call it the hiker shuffle.
Yeah.
So I'm a fan of the Joe Rogan Experience podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And him and his buddies every year have been doing this thing called Sober October. And, of course, the sober part explains itself.
Right, right.
But they have a fitness challenge every time they do it. So this time they have to burn 500 active calories every day. And when I say active calories, I mean you have to track a workout. So I have a Garmin Fenix,
mm-hmm.
and I have been trying to do the same challenge. So every day, started on October 1st, I tried burning 500 calories. So I made a mistake. All right. I've been successful thus far. Now, at the time of recording this, right now it's 11:33 a.m. and I slept in today, so I haven't done my workout. I'll do it after you leave.
Yeah.
But I plan on burning that 500 calories. And October 1st, we're talking about the legs.
Yeah.
Right? The hiker legs, hiker shuffle. October 1st, I said, I'm going to come out of the gate running. And so I woke up. We're on fall break as teachers right now at my school.
My kids are on fall break too.
Yep. Congratulations.
So, yep.
And Bridget was still in bed and I woke up and I was like, I think I'm going to go for a run. And I'm not a fan of running.
I hate running,
but I feel like I'm a pretty fit guy, fairly healthy. And I said, I'm just going to go out and see how it feels. Now, I've ran 5Ks because Bridget wants me running with her.
Yeah.
And I'll just do it. But I kind of suffered through it. And those 5Ks usually last between 20 and 30 minutes at the pace that I run. And I said, you know, I don't know how many calories I'm burning because my stupid watch doesn't tell me until after I complete the workout. So I said, well, I'm not... I'm not going to do 2 workouts today. It's October 1st. I'm going to crush this 500 calories and I'm going to be done with it. So I got up. Everything is morning time, peaceful, still. And I live in a subdivision. And I ran around the subdivision. And around the subdivision, if you just do a lap around all the cul-de-sacs, blah, 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 it's about a mile, 0.95 to a mile, depending on if you're taking the sidewalks or whatever. And I was like, well, that took no time, you know, 5-10 minutes, your mile's done. I was like, it definitely didn't burn 500 calories. And Bridget had sent me this thing last month that was like, you could do a row machine. It'd take this long roughly to burn 500 calories, blah, blah, blah. And I saw the running. It was like 30 to 60 minutes. So I was like, all right, let me run further. So I took off down the road and started running around these roads that I've literally never driven that are right down the street from me.
Right.
And I done all those. And, oh, my gosh, it was brutal. And I got back to the subdivision, and I'd been running for 53 minutes. And I was like, well, might as well make it an hour. And so at that 53-minute mark, I was at, like, 5 miles. And I was like, I wonder if I can get 6 miles.
How did you feel Sunday morning, dude?
Bro, that was October 1st, right?
Sunday's the 2nd.
I got 5 miles, 5.75 miles, 5.76 once I got back to the house. And it took me right in an hour and 30 seconds or something. I come in, took a shower, and I was like, man, my legs are dead. And then the next day, I woke up, and I was like, I shouldn't have ran for an hour. Now, mind you, I checked the calories, and it was like you burned 932 calories.
There it is, man.
So I got the 500.
Yeah.
But, dude, I can't even compare how I felt that next day compared to the hiker shuffle. It wasn't even a competition.
No.
I was like, that 1 hour took more out of my legs than doing the multi-miles over a day backpacking with the weight. Oh, my God. It's so brutal. And then, to top it all off, I still had to burn 500 calories.
Right?
Yep. We took the dogs for a walk, and that's how I burn it.
Well, today is 30 days, roughly 30 days until I'm going to be taking off for the trip.
Uh-huh. Oh,
and,
I'm so excited.
And so tonight is the first night I start my plan for that.
Uh-huh.
And so my plan is, by the time I leave for this trip, I'm able to stay on a stair climber for 30 minutes.
Even with your ankle, you can do the stair climber?
Find out, won't we?
Oh.
I'm just saying, dude.
Started on slow.
I've committed too much to this, you know? So so tonight is 5 minutes.
Uh-huh.
I'm committing to 5 minutes on a stair climber. I'm going to get on elliptical and that kind of thing. So it's not too much pressure on the ankle. But
sure.
I'm going to do 5 minutes on a stair climber. That's my plan. We'll see if I can pull it off. The stair climbers suck.
I hate stair climbers.
I will tell you though, when I did Kilimanjaro back in 2016, I was able to stay on a stair climber for an hour.
At what speed?
I don't know what the speed was, just whatever it was. I just kept going. Now I messed my back up doing it too. Did I ever tell you about
you
that?
Lean forward?
Well,
no.
I held the bar the whole time. And so my arms didn't move for an hour. The muscle underneath my behind next to my scapula actually got tucked up under my scapula. And so I had this muscle that had like seized up and just got stuck under there. And I went to see a massage therapist after massage therapist after massage therapist, and nobody could get that muscle out. It was just stuck under there. And man, I hiked, I think I was 2 days into Kilimanjaro before that thing finally popped out. And it felt great. And then the last day on the, well, not the last day, next to the last day when we summited, halfway up, it popped back under there again.
What's that feel miserable. Like?
Horrible. It was just pain.
I can't imagine.
It was pain. And it's just, have you ever had a muscle Charlie horse?
Yeah.
Imagine a Charlie horse under your shoulder blade.
That's what it feels like?
That's what it was.
And how long does it last?
Weeks.
You're saying that you had the feeling of a Charlie horse? Like a
cramp, it was awful.
Cramped muscle for weeks?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
It was awful. And my chiropractor at the time was like, he goes, what are you doing for a workout? And I told him, he goes, are you putting your arms down to your side or are you holding them up? I was holding them up. He goes, well, that's what did it.
Yeah. I never use a stair stepper at the gym, but I see there's always a lady on it, different ladies.
Yeah.
And they're all like slumped over on the handrails because it's got a rail on each side.
Yeah.
And they're just, oh. And I'm like, man, that is brutal. No thanks.
Yeah, the what's the big building in Asia that everybody talks about?
The Taj Mahal?
No, the really tall one. It's in Nepal.
I got no idea.
I can't remember what it's called, but that what the stair climber had, it had like the Empire State Building and then this the needle in Space Needle in Seattle, and then it had that building.
Uh-huh.
And it would tell you how many stairs would be to climb the whole, that whole building. And so I was shooting for that building
every day.
Not every day. I mean, it got to the point where I could.
Okay.
But yeah, by the time I was ready to get on Kilimanjaro, I was doing an hour on a stair climber. So my legs were like rock solid.
Yeah. They're beast mode.
Yeah. Right now they're not.
For the record, Taj Mahal, that's in India, right?
Yes.
Which is part of Asia.
Yes.
So I'm not an idiot.
No.
Geography for the win.
From a math teacher.
I took geography in college, but you know, we studied a lot of weather patterns and stuff. We didn't really study maths. He said a lot of people accidentally took it because they were trying to, they come in, they'd be like, so we're studying rocks. He's like, no, that's geology. Easy mistake though. I got to say the geology would probably be more interesting to me than the geography.
Yeah. Speaking of geology, and this might tick off some people, but most people won't care.
I love how you prefaced it.
I make sure I get that out there right from the beginning.
Yeah.
Everywhere I go, I grab two rocks.
Uh-huh.
Somewhere.
I'm pissed.
Just grab two rocks. And I give them to my kids.
Uh-huh.
And so they've got these little jars where they have rocks from each one of my trips.
Uh-huh.
Where we go. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, so that's my little, there's my little geology thing. But I do that every time. Like when we went to Pictured Rocks,
uh-huh,
and we went to that area where they had all the multi, I don't know if you've not been to Pictured Rocks, have you?
Never.
Oh man, you gotta go. There's this area where this waterfall comes down into the Lake Superior. Uh-huh. Or as Mr. Backpacking with Jason Sir would say, Superior Lake. it would come down into it, and there was all these multicolored rocks.
Beautiful.
Like every color you can imagine. It was amazing. So I got a little pink rock for my daughter.
Oh.
And I got a little white rock for my son and brought those back to him. And it was just really cool, you know, and a lot of people do that when they go there. So yeah. I'm not weird. Like that's normal. People do that. When I went to Kilimanjaro.
Got you a rock.
Got me a little rock, you know. Yeah. Now, I didn't have kids at the time. I ended up getting that rock for a buddy of mine who collects rocks. Uh-huh. And he goes, hey, dude, can you give me a rock from Mount Kilimanjaro? I was like, yeah, dude, I'll get you a rock. So I was like, that big, you know.
John
he
Kelly
was so pumped. So
come
pumped.
Back, fly back with 8 pounds of rocks.
8 pounds of rocks. Yeah, yeah. Like it's, but it's funny how many people really get upset by that.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. You are, it's not exactly leave no trace. So,
yeah, because you know somebody's going to really miss that rock.
Yeah.
I could promise you, if you came and looked at that campsite before I got there and after I left, you'd have no idea I took that little tiny rock.
Yeah. I think that they think it's a slippery slope.
I'm sure.
I do get it. Whenever it comes to like damaging the environment of some of the like creatures and stuff around what's the endangered species in the Smokies? The lizard type deal?
Salamanders?
It's like a devil something.
Oh, I have no idea.
I'll show you a picture. I'm sure there's some people out there that know what I'm talking about. They live in like the waters and stuff. And so when people move the rocks, it destroys their ecosystem.
Oh, I
get some
you.
Of it literally kills some of them. So I get it. But taking that little pebble, I think it'd be fine.
Oh, they're not big rocks. I'm not taking some animals home. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I don't know. Those same people are eating factory farm things that, we're literally destroying entire ecosystems, even tilling up the ground.
I don't think it's possible to do anything without destroying the ecosystem.
Gotta have
some
sacrifice, man.
I think everything does it to some trade-off.
Yeah, but it's okay. We're all living here on this little blue ball floating through space.
Man, we're just a few days away. A few days away, we're going to be in the woods together. Oh, it's been forever.
Oh, man, I can't wait.
Stoked, dude. I'm stoked. Yeah. And with that said, thank you all for tuning in. This was kind of the most hodgepodge, mishmashed, whatchamacallit episode that we've ever had.
This is what, if we hang out, like let's say that we're just eating lunch or dinner.
This is what we end up talking about.
Yeah, this is it. So this is just a recording of us hanging out. And we talked a lot of backpacking, maybe more backpacking and gear and stuff than normal. A lot of times when we have the guest on.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, no poop stories. There, I got the word in for you guys just so you could hear it.
Poop. But yeah. I'm right there with you, man. That was a fun episode.
Yeah, man. So for myself and Jeremiah, you guys have a good one. We'll catch you on the next one.
Yeah. Adios, folks.
Adios.